So I'm Jacob Barr. I'm here because I really enjoy mission-minded marketing. If you need to get a hold of me, you can reach me. My email address is jacob@irapture.com. I'll be glad to answer any questions about any marketing topics if you happen to have any.
All right. So we're going to start. Come on in. So we're going to start by talking about your audiences. And I don't want to belabor the point, but I do want to bring it up because I know several groups are still struggling with this topic. And so you need to know who you're reaching. And it boils down basically into two different camps or groups. The abortion vulnerable client group, or women at risk and men at risk of choosing abortion. And then secondly, the life-minded community who you're trying to, who wants to help you reach the abortion-minded. And so, essentially, it's good to know that these two groups are in different spaces. They have different postures, we have a different voice for each, they have different goals and objectives. And that reflects on our brand strategy. So having a client-facing brand and having that be different than your donor-facing brand is a good long-term strategy. And I know 60% or more of clinics probably have one brand, and then they might have two websites, but only one brand still. But looking over the long term into like 5+ year territory, it's good to have the vision to be working towards one brand for the client and then a different brand for the donor. And one of the analogies I often use, and if you've talked to me before about it, you'll know the answer, but it all starts with, I try to find like a secular example of this issue, and I found Quaker Oats. So who in here happens to know who owns Quaker Oats?
General Mills.
It's PepsiCo. So on one hand, we have Pepsi that is unhealthy and branded very strongly towards the youth, and we have another brand, Quaker Oats, that is healthy. And they're on two different sides of this health spectrum. And they both do quite well, but they also do quite well as not together. Like if you saw it said Quaker Oats by PepsiCo, it wouldn't feel healthy. And so the idea is that you need to have one.
I'm sorry. Oh.
Someone's got a podcast. It's okay. But yeah, the idea is that they have two different names. And so I also want to illustrate one more point. So PepsiCo also owns Taco Bell and Lay's potato chips. And what's interesting is that with Taco Bell, they have a couple different brands. Like they have Pepsi and Mountain Dew and Taco Bell all inside one space because it's all unhealthy and delicious. And then they don't have Quaker Oats in Taco Bell. And so the idea is that if you have several like-minded groups, you can have them together and maybe have more than one brand together. But if you have a different group, we need to have a different space, a different posture, a different voice, and not have them overlapping. And that's the idea to pull from PepsiCo, is that you need to think about your audiences and how that drives your branding strategies. If you want to talk more about it, I'd love to, but for the sake of time, I've got so much to cover, I only wanted to touch on this topic. Oh, and so here's also a chart. Essentially, so your donor-facing brand, and this is really small, but it says pro-life messaging, meaning your donor-facing brand is completely pro-life. And then on the opposite side, we have Planned Parenthood, who is completely pro-choice or pro-abortion, however you want to say it. And then our client-facing brand, essentially, what I'm proposing here is that it's neutral. It's trying to meet the client where they are because the client is gravitating in this direction. And we need to meet her where she is in order to build trust and rapport and then help her drive her in the other direction. But we need to build trust and rapport where she is first. And she's not pro-abortion. She is more okay with abortion and willing to use it because that's what she's been told and marketed to be done by society. And so the idea is that having a neutral-facing brand that reaches her where she's at is helpful, and then using trust to provide direction. And trust is the key. If you trust somebody, you listen to their voice. All right. Creating a budget. So I'm going to talk about a few options beyond cash. Cash is obviously great for spending on marketing, but a few options that are really interesting, and I'm going to go over each one of these with a unique slide, but donated services, trade, volunteers, special rates for 501c3s, 501c3 grants, and negotiating for better services. So donations. So when it comes to building out your marketing plan, if you discover, you know, this is where we want to be, but our budget only covers a portion of it, one way to still get there is to ask for services to be partially or fully donated. Because if you're working with a vendor who is just as life-minded as you are and called by God into this work, then why wouldn't they also desire to donate part or all of those services? And so asking someone to donate, I think, is a really good strategy to essentially achieve that desired budget level, even if cash only takes over a portion of it. Another idea is trade. So trade is a very powerful tool to allow you to have a budget beyond cash. So for example, I've been doing trade with Marsha in Alliance for Life, Missouri for about 12 years, where I provide website services in exchange for booth space and advertising. And I would like to propose that you could do the same thing with a variety of vendors. If you were to go to a vendor and say, would you mind sponsoring our event and being listed along our sponsors in exchange for services with this value? I think a lot of vendors would say yes. And so I would encourage you to use trade. I'm going to guess that no one in here has used trade before. Has anyone ever used trade? Okay, one. Any of two? Okay, good. Awesome. But I would encourage the rest of the 85% to consider, yeah, using trade as a tool to increase your budget. Another idea is volunteers. And this is going beyond your regular volunteers. I'm talking about writers, videographers, storytellers, people who are good at marketing, designers. Essentially, if you find volunteers who can then complement your design team or your marketing team, giving them more people to help complete projects, and that can lower the cost. Another good idea is 501c3 rates. So just like we were talking a moment ago before people all came in, was Buffer. It's another tool, just like Constant Contact and Salesforce. There are several companies that offer nonprofit rates, either at 50% off, or 20% off, or 100% off, and they range. But you won't know about the rate unless you look for it. And so if you're working with a vendor, one of the common questions would be is, do you happen to have a 501c3 nonprofit rate? And then you might have to provide some documentation, and then all of a sudden you're getting your services at $80 less per month, or for free per month compared to $200 per month. There's a wide range of companies that provide special rates for 501c3. And Constant Contact and Salesforce are two that I listed here, but there's several more. But just essentially in general, the idea is to ask. Another one is grants. So several companies provide grant opportunities. So Google has their grant for $330 per day, $10,000 per month ongoing, allowing for someone to have a pay-per-click grant-based account. But they also provide a G Suite grant. So if anyone's paying for G Suites, oh, and I'll send you a copy of this presentation if you just send me an email. I'll be glad to just send you a link. But yes, so then, you can take pictures still, but I don't mind sending you a link as well.
What is your email?
Oh, it's jacob at irapture.com. And, but yeah, so G Suites, essentially, if you apply for the G Suite grant, that can replace an $86 per month budget that would otherwise be covering those really nice services that Google provides. Another one is Live Chat. That one's valued at like $200 per month. And that's the same service that OptionLine uses for their chat service. And if you apply for the Live Chat grant, from my experience, you have to apply three times because they'll say no. But if you have someone like me who's persistent, then you'll eventually get the yes, as long as you know how to keep working that question. And then billboards. So years ago, I used to work for Clear Channel Outdoor, and so it was just a large billboard company. And part of what I understood by working there is that they only have about
40% of their billboards are actually purchased per month in a typical market in a typical month. And so if you provide the suggestion that you would like to essentially ask them to provide a donation receipt, and you would provide the printed fresh paper for that billboard, there's a good chance that they will let you put that fresh paper on the board without having to pay for the location. But you have to go in knowing that they don't sell 100% ever in any market. They never sell 100%. They usually sell like 20 to 50, typically, per market. And that seems a lot lower than you would expect, because they always have paper up. But usually that paper is older, and they like to have fresh paper up on the boards. Another one is inside of a bus. In the same concept, they usually, with a bus that's run by a given city, and I'm thinking in Missouri there's probably not a lot of buses, so I'm going to keep going on that one. But just know that there's other places that have places to advertise. Okay. And then with this slide, at first I wrote negotiate for a better rate to compare companies, but then I upgraded it to say negotiate for better services and still look at different companies. So if you're comparing companies to use for a given service, think about service levels more so than price tag. And just consider how we can do things better and greater, more so than how we can do things cheaper. Because we're trying to strive for excellence more so than small budget. So the goal is to actually grow your organization to be greater and larger. And so thinking about better services is a really good concept. So now we're about to enter the main part of the presentation. We're going to go through several ideas. And I'd like you to write down each idea, which is like 1 to 3 words, hopefully, sometimes a bit more. And then give it a scale, a weight, anywhere between 0 to 10. And the idea is that after you have this list of ideas, and you eventually could identify which ones you thought were really good 10s, and then just focus on 1 10 at a time, so it doesn't become overwhelming, because marketing is really good at overwhelming people with too many ideas. But if you take one of your best ideas and just focus on one at a time, it becomes much more doable and doesn't seem so scary. So the first idea is having a marketing manager. So the idea is to have a person, whether it's a staff member, a board member, a volunteer, a vendor, having somebody who will essentially collect good ideas, work with a plan, and then drive those ideas forward and following up. And so this is, in my opinion, is a really good idea to essentially sort of organize this whole world of ideas and know which idea we're going to be doing next and when and so forth. So having a marketing manager. The next idea we have is hold a quarterly review. So if your marketing manager person were to go to you, the executive director, let's say every 3 months, and say, how did the last 3 months go? And letting that data and experience drive the next 3 months. And also to ask, what's coming up down the pipe? What do we have to plan for in the next 3 months? Or what should we do next? So a quarterly review is a good way of using the data to impact your future decision making, which really just means that essentially having a 20 minute possibly, or an hour and 20 minute meeting about once every 3 months. The next idea is to have an annual plan where you essentially know where you're going for the next 12 months. And this would allow you to know when your Walk for Life is approaching, or your banquet, or your baby bottle campaign, or when the Mother's Day campaign may be coming up, Father's Day, these different events that are on the calendar. And by having a 12-month plan, you can essentially plan to do the work that needs to be done before they come. And as you're probably noticing, a lot of these ideas that I'm pitching here are not like spend money at the radio station or TV or broadcast or newspaper. These are all labor-based ideas that have really excellent value. This is a very different approach than you. If you went to business school, they would be promoting radio, TV, newspaper, YouTube pre-roll, et cetera. But this essentially is more of like a small-scale pregnancy clinic version of a marketing plan. Okay, the style guide. So this, I'm gonna guess everyone in here has a logo, but I'm also gonna guess only about 15% or less of the group in here has a style guide, possibly even less than that. A style guide allows you to have your logo defined, maybe an alternate shape. This is a logo that fits within a square. This is a logo that fits within a rectangle, and this is actually a style guide that we used for an event in San Bernardino, California about 2 months ago. And so we have the colors defined. We have the certain fonts defined. We have, this is my favorite part right here, the graphic elements and icons that that complement our logo. And then we have a few textures defined. The idea here is that this might be an investment of 12 hours, but it will make all of your social media design work, your videography work, your business card layout, letterhead, everything else becomes easier. Things that might have taken an hour before now take 5 minutes, because all we're doing is taking these pre-built elements and just moving them around. And they look really good because they were designed with that, by, you know, essentially using elements like this and applying them, they will look good and it takes a lot less time. And so style guides, I would say, is a really, really excellent idea. The intake form. So everyone in here has an intake form, but I don't know what you're asking on the intake form. I would expect some of you are not asking demographics, maybe, and I know some of you are, but, and so I would encourage you to ask for, you can pull the skin tones from the county website on demographics, but when it comes to age, marital status, and how many children someone has had for your client base, that's going to impact your voice when it comes to how you might write your content. So if a majority of your clients happen to be between the ages of 30 and 40 and have one child, you're going to say things differently than if a majority of your clients are between 20 and 30 and happen to be heading towards college. And so who your client base is can be defined based on the intake form, and that allows you to update your voice and your messaging to reflect who you're reaching. And then also, it's good to keep it updated, so if you start advertising in a new place, you can add it into that list of how did you hear about us. And so listing out all of the places that you're advertising and then encouraging someone to select all that apply would allow you to find out whether it's internet/Google, or it's word of mouth by a friend or professional, or the billboard, or the college ministry, or whatever it happens to be, those need to be listed on that intake form and kept up to date. And then using those demographics in that quarterly review could be helpful for how you might change your voice if you see a new trend arising. And then those demographics will speak into your messaging plan. So this is essentially the same concept as that style guide for how to use your logo. A messaging plan is like, what words do we want to use? What phrases do we want to use, and what words do we not want to use? And so a messaging plan allows you to sort of define how we're going to say things, and then you can use it when you're building content, social media pieces, videos, etc. So a messaging plan is a really helpful tool for what your voice sounds like to the appropriate client. And you can have a messaging plan for your clients, and you can have a different messaging plan for your donors to understand those two different voices. And I apologize if I'm going really fast, I just have a lot of slides to work through. If you have any questions about any of these slides, feel free to reach out to me and I'll be glad to spend upwards of an hour on just one of these ideas. Okay, Google pay-per-click ads. So Google is the number one vehicle for reaching, well, Google is the number one place where people find answers to questions. And according to intake forms, if you're in a community that's in more than 50,000 people, I would guess it's your number one result on your intake forms. And if you're in a community that's only got 15,000 people, I would guess it's number two, right below word of mouth by a friend and professional. But essentially, this is the ad to show up. When someone does a search on Google, these will show up at the very top and the very bottom, and they do help drive traffic to your website, and it's a great place to spend time and efforts. Word of mouth. So word of mouth is number two in larger markets, and it's number one in markets under 50,000 from my experience so far in like today's world. And so word of mouth is not just organic. I mean, it is organic, but it can be influenced. There are ways that you can impact how word of mouth will show up in your community. If someone knows, if someone's been to your clinic and they've walked through your clinic and they know what you do and they have a positive story to share, they've now been empowered to provide word of mouth better than someone who's just seen a slide at church or just seeing you on the internet. And so when you're giving those tours, you are empowering people to provide word of mouth. And so I would encourage you to, there's books on word of mouth marketing, and this is a place where we could, again, dive in very deep. But the idea is that it should be on your marketing plan. This is not something you should just let happen organically. This is something that you can promote. And one of my favorite ideas is when you identify someone who is providing word of mouth referrals, find out what their love language is and encourage them to keep doing it even more. So if you find out who's talking, find ways to say thank you based on their love language. Okay. Professional word of mouth. So this is when you, for when your clients are being referred to another organization, you're providing them word of mouth. So if you're referring someone to a post-abortion healing group, that's word of mouth for that group. But what we're talking about here is for you to connect with organizations that will drive traffic to you. And so you want to make sure that you're building connections and relationships so that they have a level of trust with you. And that comes through relationship building. And so this is a good time to spend taking that person out to dinner, spending an hour, maybe 2 hours, because time adds up and adds into, you know, essentially creates relationship. And relationship is a way to build trust. So essentially your homework is to take people out to dinner, which I think is pretty good. And so, whether it's Chipotle or somewhere better, I mean, that'd be great. Okay, promoting reviews. So reviews show up on Google when someone searches, and it's really important to have positive reviews so you can mitigate or reduce the damage when there's a fake review campaign who then creates fake reviews on you, which would then damage. So if you only have 3 reviews and someone writes 3 fake reviews, they just cut your review stars in half. But if you have 80 5-star reviews and they write 3 negative reviews, no one's gonna notice and you can still clean them up. And so I would encourage you to have lots and lots of positive reviews. Encourage your clients at the right time, after they've been clients for a good amount for the season, to write a review on their experience and just explain how it's really important and it helps you reach more people and help more people. Okay, cleaning up old information. So if you happen to have old addresses, old phone numbers, old names, this should be found and cleaned up. This is a labor piece where essentially you have to go and look for it. And this might be found in directories, it might be found on your own website, but wherever it happens to be, one way to find it is to Google your old phone number, to Google your old address, this old information that needs to be found. Another way to find it is to comb through your website and look for anything that's expired, and then remove the expired pieces. Content creation. So there are, in my estimation, roughly 2 different types of content that Pregnancy Clinics have. Marketing content and high quality, like Wikipedia style content. This is referring to the Wikipedia style content, which is sort of we're all familiar with marketing content. That's what we all have on our homepage and near the homepage. This is more as a informational article that Google might score at the 10 out of 10 level when it comes to their ranking algorithms. And so part of that equation is to have 300 plus words, which right there it makes it so it's not a marketing piece anymore by just the word count alone. And then having citations. Citations with the CDC, Mayo Clinic, womenshealth.gov, essentially national grade citations I think are ideal just to not give anyone a way to
essentially try to use the highest grade citations you can, I think is the best strategy there. And then having stock photos that resemble your demographics and resemble the content. And the difference about Wikipedia style content is the images actually match the content, whereas marketing content is essentially matching where you want people to be. So in this article, you might have the woman who is having a hard time right now going through this decision, whereas in marketing content, you might have the 7 out of 10 smile where she looks happy and positive and hopeful. Now, and this content, you might try and actually relate. The images are trying to match the text more so than trying to drive a marketing call to action as the primary goal. But all I have to say is different content has different strategies. Okay, so one part of having a really good article is to have an infographic. An infographic has boxes and arrows and lines and circles. And the idea is that if you're talking to a generation or an audience that is in the millennial generation or younger, infographics will allow you to essentially keep that person on the page longer. And also they might actually read the content more in the infographic than they would in say some paragraphs of text. And so infographics, the reason why I really like them is because it helps someone stay on the page for an extra 12 seconds. The idea is that if you keep someone on your page longer, then Google will give you points or scores for a higher quality score. The goal is to keep someone on your page long enough for them to answer their questions so they don't repeat their Google search and try somewhere else. And so, and part of that is having imagery such as infographics.
Do you have a site anywhere that you have found good infographics, or is that something?
So usually a graphic designer will make one to match the content, and we have several that we've created for articles, and if you send me an email, I'll be glad to send you like a dozen examples of that.
You don't have an actual example here for us to look at.
I would like to, but the problem is I've got like 70 slides, and I figured if I start diving into those details, I would never make it back up.
Yeah.
But if you email me, I would love to show you lots of examples. But essentially, it's just showing how a circle can have lines and points, where if you had a word here and a word here, the idea is that you have words connected to other words, and people play with the lines with their mind. It's sort of like, it's a gamification piece. Welcome. So just like infographics, video is practically the same when it comes to keeping someone on the page longer. So video allows us to use storytelling, facial expressions, audio, but the goal is to, again, communicating a message and keeping someone on the page longer so that they don't repeat their Google search and that they find the answer they're looking for. And really, a good article will often have, all of these elements. The right number of words, good stock imagery that matches your demographics, the infographic piece, the video, again, using demographics to decide which pigments need to be included based on your geographic area, based on the population that you're serving.
And what's the best length?
Oh, a video?
For that video, that you're going
to
have.
That's a good question. I would. My first thought was 3 minutes, but it could vary. I would say short.
Okay.
It could be 30 seconds, honestly. I wouldn't go shorter than 30 seconds. Uh-huh. But it could be longer because they don't have to watch the whole thing either. If they watch 12 seconds of it, that helps. Mm-hmm. Even if it's 12 seconds out of 30 or 12 seconds out of 2 minutes. So open source and authorized content. So this is something, so my group, we've been creating several content pieces that we have marked as either open source or authorized. Open source means anyone is allowed to use them. And then authorized means they simply have to ask for permission to use them. And so the benefit of using a piece like this is that you could take advantage of the 30 hours it took to build the video, maybe the 4 hours it took to write the article, and collect the stock images, the 1 hour it took to make the infographic, the 30 minutes it took to do the SEO,
maybe the 40 minutes it took to make a Spanish translation if you need to have Spanish content. But essentially, open source and authorized content essentially is a full package piece that can be recycled using the best economy of scale tool I know of, which is copy and paste. And then rebranding it with your logo allows it to be done essentially on the quick, which makes it less, very low cost. SEO. So SEO is the, so basic SEO is the service of having the code match the content on the page. So if your page is about a certain topic, making sure that the tags and the code reflect that same message and content. And so essentially, doing SEO is more of like a one-time job. It doesn't have to be done every month. When someone promotes doing SEO on the monthly, that might involve perhaps maybe organic link building, but I don't think of that as being a good use of time. But doing the basic SEO of having the code reflect the content on your page, which can be done completely and then you don't have to keep doing it, is something that can be done in roughly 20 to 30 minutes given up for a typical page, from my experience. And then essentially it's one and done. And one of the so most people will probably have WordPress sites in here, probably 80%. Who in here has a WordPress base? Oh, who maybe knows it's a WordPress site? Who doesn't know what kind of site they have? Probably some people. Okay. So if you happen to be using WordPress, the best tool that I know of is Yoast. I mean, one of the things I like about Yoast is that it will help you identify where you can spend more time based on their algorithms. And so it'll mark certain areas with a red or yellow flag, and then when things are sort of within their algorithm's goal line, then it's marked with a green flag. And so that's a really easy way to identify where you can spend more time and where you can let certain parts rest. CTA, so this stands for call to action. So on your website and marketing, especially on your website, almost every page should have a call to action, which would be like the schedule appointment button, a call this, phone number, link, perhaps maybe a sign up for our e-letter, some kind of action that you want the audience person to take if you could decide. And so making that call to action prominent, making it show up, relatively frequently, is very important. So essentially evaluating your website to make sure that it has a call to action regularly is very helpful. Because then, when someone does take that call to action, that if you don't have your CTA regularly promoted, then it'd be hard for them to then take that desired action. Website stats. So looking at the website, so tracking stats is important. I would suggest using Google Analytics, and then there's several other companies you could consider using, but Google Analytics is almost like a must when it comes to working with Google in a variety of ways. The website stats will essentially help you identify strengths and opportunities or weaknesses so that you can essentially know where to, if you have a strong page, you might want to do more to make it even stronger. And if you have a weak page, you might want to do things differently to try and or remove it based on the stats. So one of the things that the stats will tell you is your most important pages. And so when a page is doing very well, don't be afraid to try and improve it. Sometimes I'll hear people say, this page is doing so good, I'm afraid to touch it because I'm afraid it might make it, it might change the algorithm and it may not work anymore. I would like to encourage you to not have that fear at all. Making page changes is a way to make it better. And one of the best tools to do that is with A/B testing. So A/B testing essentially is, I have this page that's doing however it might be doing, let's say it's doing great. And I'm thinking about trying to make it even greater. So if I made a different version, let's say I use a different picture, I could have it so Google would show using a tool called Google Optimize, but there's several other A/B testing tools, but one's called Google Optimize, where you essentially can have your main page and then your alternate page, and you essentially can have them both delivered 50% of the time for a given period of 3 months. And then based on the conversion tracking, you could find out who's the winner.
So if one page ends up having a higher performance, or what, you know, that version, let's say the star ends up having people stayed on the page for 38 seconds, and with the triangle, they stayed on that page for 18 seconds. We essentially can identify which one had a better performance with A/B testing. It's really easy to do. It might seem very different or outside of your wheelhouse, but if I can show you how to do it, and it's very, very easy to get started with. So rebuilding your website. So websites don't last forever. I've seen websites that have been up for 10 years, and it's not a good thing. I would encourage you to think about rebuilding your site possibly every 2 to 5 years, somewhere in that range. I think that's about where website rebuilds are. When there's a new device that comes out, that's a good time to think about, is my website compatible with that new device, when that device becomes mainstream, at least, or mainstream enough. Essentially, websites don't last forever. There's lots of technology behind the scenes that need to be updated, and sometimes certain plugins don't get updated by your providers, and rebuilding a site is almost like a way of getting a fresh start. But it is a big undertaking, and so it's good to try and delay it if we can. Website audits. This is actually one of my favorite slides. So I really enjoy doing website audits. So analyzing each blob or chunk with questions about your audience. So if I was to analyze this slide as if I was doing it as a website audit, I would look at this color piece over here, these two shades of orange that have a gradient. I would look at this title tag, website audit, and I would evaluate, how does this speak to my audience? How could I make this better? How could I make it shorter? Does it need to be more to the right so it feels more centered? I would evaluate this chunk next, this sentence. And then I would evaluate the icon. The idea is that you take one piece of your site and you ask a series of questions about it in order to identify what could be done to improve it and polish it. And so website audit work, if you look at a website, it might look okay or good, but if you do a website audit, you'll find all of the details that could be improved on it, and it's remarkable how you can add polish to a website by digging into the details. And my analogy is that, you know, icebergs don't look like they're moving, but they are. Organizations don't look like they're moving, but they are. Your mission, your goal, your audience, everything is slowly moving. And a website audit is a way for you to help your content match the current status of your organization. And you'd be surprised on how many pieces that can be found on almost any website when it comes to doing website audits. It's amazing how much we can make things better. YouTube pre-roll. So this is a way to advertise in a certain geographic space to build awareness of a given brand or idea. And it can essentially be that video that plays when someone doesn't have a Red account before they watch that YouTube video. And it's a way to reach the generation watching YouTube, which is a large group. And you can, but this is a way to reach awareness. This is something you can consider in adding into your marketing plan as one way to raise awareness of a given idea. It's a good awareness tool. Scrubbing accounts. So, sometimes organizations have Facebook pages that no one has access to, and that's really hard. So, I would encourage you, for your social media accounts, for your website account, for your hosting account, your domain name account, for these different digital accounts that you have, the right people need to have access, and people that have moved on to a new chapter need to probably be removed to avoid their account being like a gateway to a change that's not desired. But anyways, all that to say is, you know, for all the accounts that your organization has, it's good to look at who has access and who needs access, and then simply just scrub them. Google My Business. So when someone Googles your organization name, like your brand name, your Google My Business information will show up, like with your hours of operation, your
your reviews, the pictures, and I would suggest that you claim your account if you haven't already. Hopefully most of you already have. And then I would also encourage you to make sure your profile is complete, and I would expect 70% of you have a complete profile. And then you also could possibly start adding posts and images, but I would suggest doing that after some other ideas first. But claiming your account and completing it is a really, really good idea. Adding those images and text is also a good idea, but it may not be a 10 out of 10 idea. It may be more of like a 7 out of 10. Okay, so geofencing. Geofencing allows you to have a banner ad show up on a free, really free app on an iPhone or Android. So when someone's, let's say someone's in a high school and they have their phone out at lunch and they're using a free app, the banner ad at the bottom is what we're talking about here. And essentially also with geofencing, you can pick a single point, let's say it's the high school campus, and then draw like a quarter mile circle around it so that you can show certain ads when people are in that sphere. And that could be applied at a high school, it could be applied at a mall campus, a Planned Parenthood campus. And the idea, this is a way to essentially show those ads. The amount of people that click on these ads and see these ads, I think, is less than Google by far, because they usually are focusing on the app, and a lot of these ads go unviewed, but they're also very low cost to run these campaigns, relatively when it comes to the cost per thousand. So it's one more idea. I would put it in the middle range, between 0 and 10. Social media, so creating content, images, stories, promoting your website, promoting events from the donor side. I would encourage you to have one social media account per brand or per audience grouping. So having a client-facing Facebook and then having a separate donor-facing Facebook. And most of you probably already do that. But if you don't do that, that would be a really good idea. Okay, so now, out of curiosity, who in here has had a booth at the local fair or community event? Awesome. All right. Good idea. I'm going to keep going because everyone already does it. Additional location, just like Darrell was talking. So setting vision for having like the best location or additional locations is excellent. This is like a 5-year plan or maybe a 10-year plan or a 2-year plan. But the idea is to set vision into your marketing plan. And then brainstorming. When you talk to people who enjoy brainstorming, and I enjoy brainstorming, essentially look for new ideas and evaluate what ideas you're doing and keep that conversation open so you can essentially can identify new trends and they start to show up. Okay, now for a few donor-facing ideas. All right, so the church video and 7 tables. So I'm guessing everyone in here goes to churches and talks in front of the church before a church service starts. So this idea would be to have a video that could then also play maybe before or after you talk in front of that church population. And that video would allow you to use like a client testimonial, animation, audio, storytelling. And then the 7 tables concept, this one came from Lori DeVillis. So very often I would expect everyone in here probably had like 1 to 2 tables in the back of the church. But when you go to a church with a large population of like 1,200 people, if you were to do what Lori did and have 7 tables in the back, you'll be able to reach a lot more people. And each table might have a certain ministry, might have 1 to 2 volunteers, and it just allows you to reach. With 1 table, maybe you get to talk to like 30 people, but with 7 tables, you might get to talk to a lot more people. And so it's just a way to reach and have a little more gravity. And I just think it's a really great idea to essentially making it into a bigger thing. I mean, the church has 7 tables, I'm sure. So you might just have to find the 14 volunteers to help you pull it off. All right, photos and stories. So on the donor side, photos of babies, photos of moms, their stories, the photos of the dads. This is really good content to encourage your donors to keep going. And to show the results of where their prayer has helped and where their donations and volunteering has helped. And so sharing these stories on your website, on social media, essentially the donor-facing vehicles or the donor-facing platforms would be really good. And one way to capture these stories, and this is probably a new idea. Does anyone here have a photo studio in their clinic? Anyone? All right. So this is a new idea. The idea is that a photo studio, having a 10-year-old Sony camera, having a backdrop, a basket, a blanket, and a tripod, and the light, all of that can be set up for under $1,200. Because you don't have to use current technology. 10-year-old cameras are incredible. And the idea is that if you were to have a photo studio in your clinic, there's a lot of really, and I love this story, I'm going to spend a little more time on this one. You essentially can, one thing you can do is you can honor the young mom with her decision to choose life by giving her baby photos. And so that's a really, I mean, that's a goosebump building idea, to give her photos of her and her baby that are professionally taken with essentially professional gear, even though you don't have to have a professional behind the camera. Once it's set up right, the person behind the camera has to focus and click. And the other benefit is that when that mom comes back in with her baby dressed up for the photo shoot, all of your staff and volunteers are now being honored and blessed by that baby coming back in for a photo. And I'm assuming that there might be a live audience in front of that photo. Lots of people just enjoying watching that. And then the third group that gets benefited would be your donor audience. So by asking for permission from the mom, if we can share these photos on Facebook and our website, and maybe with an anonymous name, you could then honor her, and I'm sorry, you could honor your donors by encouraging them with photos of the young mom and her baby. And so this essentially, this idea allows you to help everyone on your team. And so I really like it. Okay, passive income. So this is another new idea. I'm assuming no one in here works with drop shippers currently. Okay, so this is a brand new idea to this room. So the idea is that you essentially, let's say you have 12 t-shirt designs of positive messages, and then they have your logo on each one. Traditionally, if you had to buy 100 copies of each t-shirt, you didn't have to store them and do the shipping. But with a drop shipper, you essentially can have a e-commerce website, and when someone buys one, the drop shipper will then make the shirt and ship it. The cost per shirt goes up maybe to $12, but if you're selling it for $20, you essentially get paid, you have a fundraiser of $8 per shirt with zero labor and zero storage. And so this is an interesting idea to essentially raise, yes?
Do you have any companies that you recommend?
Yes, and if you email me, I can send you the links. I don't know I'd have to get the contact information out of my Outlook, but yeah. But yeah, I think this is a really fun new idea. And this one's awesome too. Okay, so school abstinence program. Out of curiosity, which groups happen to have a school abstinence program in the public schools currently? Okay, so about almost half. So there's, this one's really dear to my heart, because this is how I was pulled into the pro-life movement. There was a group called Unified Students for Abstinence that came to my school. It was an acting group. And they were incredibly fun and just full of energy. And I ended up wanting to join that group. And that's how I ended up first volunteering for the local crisis pregnancy centers in Tucson, Arizona. And it essentially pulled me in. So this is a way to pull in young people into the direction of being future pro-life servant leaders. And so I would encourage you to engage, and also obviously this promote abstinence, but you're also promoting leadership in the pro-life world. And so this one has, the obvious message is to promote abstinence, but the secondary benefit is that you're essentially driving people to also be connected with pregnancy clinic work, and you're growing the grassroots volunteer base and future leadership base. And there's a group out of, I think it's Indiana, called Peers, and they have a free curriculum. And if you do a Google search for Peers Pro-Life Teen Podcast, you can hear me interviewing the lady who runs it. So Peers Pro-Life Teen Podcast. And you can essentially hear the hour conversation about how it works and how she supports other groups, and there's no cost to her. So
supporting pregnancy clinics with that effort. Podcasting. So this is a way to communicate with your donors when it comes to stories. And that photo studio booth, essentially that $1,200 price tag concept of building a photo studio could also double as a podcast studio because it doesn't require much more to add in the audio piece. Or essentially it would be included. But essentially if you were to capture the story of a client, her client story on video and audio, and a podcast doesn't have to be audio only. It can be video based and then also used as audio. But the idea is that you capture those client stories or the stories of your volunteers, the stories of your staff members, the stories of your board members. Those are stories that the like-minded community love to hear and encourages them to possibly be encouraged, to see where God is working, and to see how they might be able to get involved as well. And so podcasting / for audio and video purposes is a really good way to communicate with your donor base or like-minded community base. And then also making fun videos for your donor audience. My son, who happens to just turn 13, he's actually made a couple of these videos, and we're making them available to Crazy Clinics. And the idea is that he has like a comic bit, and then he rolls it into how someone can then support by praying, volunteering, and getting involved at the local Crazy Clinic. And making fun videos is a really good way to engage on your social media campaigns for the donor-facing audience. And if you'd like for me to send you some examples, just send me an email. I'll be glad to send you several. How are we doing on time? Does this get over at 9:30? I have no idea. What's that?
9:45.
Oh, good. Good, good. Okay, so documentary. Okay, so out of curiosity, when it comes to how old, when your clinic started, who's in here with a clinic that's beyond 20 years? Okay, so about half. Okay, so for those who have clinics that are 20 years or older, having a documentary, maybe episode style, like 5-minute episodes or 15-minute episodes, that essentially try to capture that story of your roots, of the people who helped start your clinic, the people who are currently working in your clinic, and the stories of how people have been helped, amplifying God's fingerprints, amplifying just the stories of people, reflecting God's heart. I think that is a really fun idea. And if you break it down into episodes, it doesn't have to turn into this hour and a half really long documentary that many people really don't look forward to watching. But a 5-minute documentary or a 10-minute documentary can be quite enjoyable when it comes to like that. I feel like this is a really brilliant idea. And I haven't actually seen a clinic do this yet, but this is one of the ideas that I would love to see a clinic do. And I think a lot of clinics would really benefit from doing this with a videographer and storyteller. This would be a way to capture that story. So a donate button. So this is interesting. So on your donor website, it can just be a normal donate button that goes to a place to donate. But on your client-facing website, it's okay to have a donate button, but you want to realize who the audience is. So on a client-facing website, instead of having it linked directly to Stewardship or Cornerstone or eGiving or wherever you're linking to, you're going to want to have it linked to a page that says, all of our services are free because people in the community love what we do and they donate, so all of our services can be made available to our neighbors for free. And that paragraph essentially sort of cuts the strings as to why things are free. Because sometimes, like with Google, when things are free, the people using the service are the product. Like, your information is the product. And so we don't want Crazy Clinics to be put into that category of, the client's information is definitely not the product. And so having a statement that essentially defuses it and promotes people that, essentially posturing our public relations message that we are loved by the community is a really good way to have a donate button linked to that, and then having it linked to a place to donate. And so the goal with it on the client side is to cut the strings as to why things are free. Professional email. So I know a lot of people still have their main email address being something at gmail.com,
at MSN.com, hopefully not at AOL.com. But all of those.
That might hit some strings in the sermon.
So I was really hoping I didn't have to have this slide. But it'd be really good for you to give your domain name.com the high five every time you have someone write it down or use it, and to stop giving AOL any additional marketing. So in the end, whenever someone says, my email address is somethingsomething@gmail.com, you're effectively giving Google a very small but countable subliminal advertisement. And so if you switch that to promoting your domain.com, it becomes easier for people to remember your website address. So if you're always saying, let's say it's linda@hopecenter.org, and she's always telling people, my email address is linda@hopecenter.org, when someone says, well, what's your website address? And now it's easier for her to at least remember it's hopecenter.org, because she says it all the time when it comes to communicating with what her email address happens to be. And so anyway, this is just simply a very small but measurable and easy to do step. And if you need help, yes?
So do you suggest ever using, so for instance, our name will be St. Mary's Home for Mothers. Should we do like at St. Mary's or at Home for Mothers or at SMH?
So you have to figure out which, shorten it? You have to look at which domain names are available, and then pick out one that's easy to spell, easy to say, and not too crazy long, but also that communicates who you are. And so you have to look at what's available. And so you might end up being able to find, like, St. Mary's, what's it again?
St. Mary's Home for Mothers.
Yeah, that's a longer name. So you might want to find a way to make it so it turns into something that's a little bit, you know, otherwise your business card font will be smaller.
Yes, exactly.
So you might want to pick, maybe you could, yeah, pick one phrase of like the primary part of the name, and then treat the other part almost like a slogan. Mm-hmm. So you say St. Mary's
Home for Mothers.
Yeah. So maybe like stmarieshome.org. That might be worth trying out. If that's not available, you could try stmarieshome.life or dot something else.
And I would just say we're smaller centers, and we just switched to this, and it's Google Suite. So
yes.
Make sure that you go that route if you haven't done this yet. So.
Do you choose a different domain in Google Suite, or does it end up being at?
They're sort of separate. So your domain name and Google Suites, but you can't really use Google Suites without having your own domain name.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, for non-for-profit.
But the domain name is like something that comes first and is separate, and then you can get the G Suite grant.
Okay.
Do you find that it's more difficult, though, for people to find your domain if it is a, say, .life or .us
yeah.
or whatever?
I think .org and .com are the best, but when those aren't available,
you think it's okay to go to those others?
I think it's okay, but I wouldn't say it's the best idea. But when they're already taken, we have to look at other ideas.
They're usually more expensive. To
the
.life.
Right.
Yeah, like a .com and .org is like $15 per year-ish, and then a .life might be like $36.40 per year. But it's a cost per year, and so in the grand scheme of things, I would still mark that as lower.
Super.
But yeah, I mean low as in other expenses compared to. All right. So SWOT analysis. So one of the things that might impact how you do different things is when you identify your strengths. And the idea with strengths is that you want to keep them strong and help them grow stronger. And then on the opposite side, you might identify your weaknesses. And the list that I have on here, like quality care for clients and low awareness, these are just examples, because each center is going to have their own strengths and their own weaknesses and their own set of opportunities. And then threats as well. It's like, for example, being silenced on Google. That's a current threat that's affecting the country when it comes to like the abortion pill reversal ads being filtered to practically zero traffic in recent months. And so there are some, this is a good way to sort of understand just sort of like the marketplace that you're trying to work in by thinking about the strengths and weaknesses and the opportunities and threats. And then this is an example of just a holiday calendar showing some some events that happen to be spread out over the different months. Not that you need to use these, but the idea is just to show you an example of how you might have certain events for donor marketing and then certain holidays that might affect how you're going to voice your social media message that given month. And I think that's about it. So this is great. I didn't realize that's going to be ahead of schedule. So what questions might you have?
I have one.
Yes.
Our current logo is very feminine. It's a butterfly and it's pink and purple.
Okay.
So I'm trying to figure out a way to kind of keep that our brand, but rebrand basically
to
for clients.
The men audience?
Yes.
Yeah.
So do you have any suggestions on, so on our website, you know, we have pinks and purples, but then we also do some greens included with it.
Yeah.
So
I would encourage you to have a brainstorming session with and identify how you want to make it so that it's acceptable to the male audience. And it might be changing the colors to colors that work for both. Or it might mean modifying the imagery so that it works for both. Not that a butterfly can't work.
It's hard to make a butterfly any less feminine.
It is. Yeah. The first thing that came to mind was caterpillar, but I don't think that's...
Well, but what you were saying about having, you know, you could do one logo brand for your clients and then one for your donors.
Yeah, I don't have any experience in doing that. And you could. You could make a... What's the ministry called for men, or is everything for men and women?
Yeah, it's just the Pregnancy Help Center.
Yeah.
So we sometimes use just like PHC. So I had thought about just doing like, you know, bold PHC and then like Pregnancy Help Center underneath it.
Yeah, because pregnancy also sounds like that would lean towards the female audience
right.
as well. So there's a lot of things to consider. And it may be a matter of just brainstorming and going back and forth. But identifying the audience and identifying the goals would then sort of direct the creative work.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Any other questions?
Going back to the domain. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
Going back to the domain, does having one of those other ones, like a .life or whatever, those kinds of things, affect the search at all?
So if it's your main domain name, they show up in Google just like other domains.
Okay.
But I would not recommend having redirects. Like let's say you have a .com, .org, and .life, and let's say you're having all of them redirect to the .org. Those .com and .life have no benefit on SEO or search engine work. The only benefit is if someone happens to type in .com, they would get redirected to the .org. But that doesn't, yes. When someone Googles, though, because Google does not show redirects in their search results. Yes?
Would you recommend having like one of those fancy email signatures that has the square and your picture and all those?
I think so. Yeah, I think that looks professional. And it also provides all the contact information someone might need to follow up. And so I think those are helpful. Yeah. So looking for volunteers, like that's a really good place for volunteers because if they complete the project in a week, amazing. But if it takes them 20 weeks, it's still going to get done, right? And so that's a really good place to have volunteer writers. And then if you give, but then you also have to then manage and review and polish. You might have, the editor role. But I would say looking for volunteers, writers would be a good fit. You also could
have super valuable for like you need the blog.
What's valuable is that you cover all the words. So when it comes to having content on the phrase abortion pill reversal, or whatever phrase it happens to be, you need to have high quality content on that topic written for your audience. And so if you do have a writer, whether it's a vendor, a volunteer, or a staff member, the direction for the marketing plan should be, we need content on this topic that Google is going to score at a high level so we get found organically, and we get better scores on our pay-per-click ads. And so the goal is to have content on every, basically you want content that will resemble your you being the champion of that topic. So when Google finds it, they say, oh, you know, there's good citations and the content is well written and people enjoy it. And then after someone writes that content, that's when you might bring in the graphic designer, whether it's a vendor, volunteer, or staff member, to bring in the stock photos, the infographic, the video, and then you might ask the next person to do the SEO to make the code match the content. And then if you're, is it English only, or do you have any other languages?
Right now, just English.
Yeah, so when it comes to Spanish-speaking populations, even if you have a Spanish-speaking population, you have to have the staff member or volunteer who's regularly there before you can even start promoting it. Otherwise, it wouldn't make sense to bring in primarily Spanish-speaking people unless you have the person to then help them. That's also another area where I see, the Spanish-speaking population, making a Spanish version of your entire website and your content is a good idea once you have that Spanish-speaking person that's there long enough to make it work for the...
Google for that. I mean, it's not...
Oh, for Google Translate?
Yeah.
So one of my translators, his technique is to use Google Translate to translate it, and then he fixes all the mistakes. And that's a way to fast-track translation work. But yeah, I would say it's a good step, but you need someone who's good at Spanish in order to actually correct what Google did, incorrectly with the AI version of the translation.
It feels like QR codes are making a comeback. I mean, it seems like they were kind of silent for a while.
I think they're fine, yeah.
Is it something you think we should use more?
You could use it on signage in order to give someone an easy way to, instead of giving someone a long URL that's like 40 characters long, a QR code makes it easy just to, go to that page without having to spell it out on the phone. And so having it in certain places would be good.
Do you think brochures still play a big part of marketing plans?
Brochures?
Yeah.
I do. I think you could utilize brochures in your clinic when it comes to handing out, having content ready, that's print ready, ready to be handed out on certain topics. And then also, it has like the same sort of concept as it needs to probably be reviewed and possibly redesigned to make it match your style guide. And if it matches your style guide, you're probably in good shape until your style guide changes. But actually, that's probably the number one reason to redo those brochures is so that you can match your current logo and style guide.
Yeah, we were actually thinking about putting a QR code on the brochure that then would take you to the website. Or
it could take you to a video. It could take them to a resource. It could take them to the website, a certain page. But as long as it has a purpose, that would help, that they would enjoy going to that next resource.
Kind of look at those as more of a client focus versus any kind of
owner. Oh, yeah. I think so. Not to say that you couldn't have something like that at an event, but in the center it would all be client focused. Mm-hmm. But at like your event, you might have possibly print material for donors to show. Maybe it's like the annual report, for example, or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions?
So when you brand for donors,
yes.
So you're using kind of your overall branding colors, set, whatever. So how does that differ?
I would suggest having one mark for the client, and your donor mark would be different. And it could have the same color palette, but they also could be different. This is different than Pepsi versus Quaker Oats. It doesn't have to be the same. It doesn't have to have links, like a common thread. It doesn't have to. And I know 60% of clinics do have like their main name and then friends of that name. Like that's a very common trend. Or the main name and then support some name.org. But I feel like that's because we've been in this movement for a long time and we're growing as we get better. But looking towards the next 40 years, I think we need to have a brand more so than just like a friends of the client name.
Okay.
Kind of
related to that, we did doing business as name for our clients, and then we do pregnancy resource name for donors, and then clients that have transitioned into long-term classes. But for the abortion-minded clients, we have a completely different name, and it's really freed up our ability to market directly to clients the way we need to and keep donors happy with
what they want to see on our website.
So I want to share a couple of ideas, benchmarking off of that. So one idea I call the brand day fix, which is when you have one name and you're using it in both places, you can essentially use the initial all the time on donor marketing. This is not a permanent fix, it's just a brand aid fix. And so use the initials, and that way when someone Googles the brand that the clients know you by, it shows the client site. When someone Googles the initials, it shows the donor site. But that's not a good long-term fix, it just gets you past it helps you get through this transition. And then I'd also like to encourage you to consider not changing your donor-facing name, because your donors have been with you probably for 28 years, and there's no reason to shake that tree. But for your client-facing name, the goal is to have clients for one season, and that's the opportunity to make a really focused and better name, and to add a client-facing name while not changing your donor-facing name. Because I think there's damage done when people change the donor-facing name. And then there's opportunity for improvement on changing the client-facing name. And not to say that that's universal. I mean, that's just general. But I want to look at your actual names to provide you with exact advice. Like, there's a disclaimer piece. Like, you know, consult a professional before making these changes and get feedback and lots of, roundtable it. because sometimes people have names that really sound great for client marketing and they don't really work for donor marketing. That's the exception. Most names in the pro-life world are made for the donor side. Mostly because they were built 28 years ago or more. All right, I think we're out of time. Or do we have 8 more minutes still, or 3 more minutes?
3.
All right, any other questions, thoughts, comments?
Please fill out your evaluations. Don't take them from you at the door.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's amazing.
I'm good. I was a little nervous.
You did a great job.
I rewrote it last night.